Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And, you know, it's Wednesday, and every Wednesday we like to deal with the outdoors and the environment on this program. And today's no exception. Time to start thinking about camping and going camping. And our guest has some great advice to share with you. Darren Kirby is the author of a number of fiction and nonfiction books. He also writes a blog about tent camping. And we'll talk about his book. It's titled The Best Tent Camping Guide, From Novice to Expert. So, are you an experienced tent camper? What are some of the lessons you've learned over the years? Maybe you're a novice. What would you like to know? Maybe an experience to share. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Darren Kirby, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, thanks, Larry. It's great to be with you.
You know, you don't have to convince me about the fun and the good feelings of tent camping, because I've tent camped literally hundreds of times in my life, and I always enjoyed it. How long have you been camping? Tent camping?
I've been camping in general since I was just a young kid. I was blessed with parents who wanted to bring myself and my brothers into the great outdoors in a variety of ways, and camping was one of those. When I got a little older in my teen years, as most teens kind of want to, you know, flex their wings and become a little more independent, my parents had a tribal trailer. I wanted to be in a tent. And it's kind of stuck ever since. So we're talking decades worth of tent camping experience.
Yeah. Why do you like it?
I like it because it's simple.
Yeah.
You know, compared to when you're taking a travel trailer or an RV and some other setups, there's a lot of additional setup work that needs to happen before you really can start enjoying you know, the great outdoors. And with a tent, we've got it between my wife and I now, we have it kind of down to a really good set of setup rules. And so we're probably going to be done within 10 minutes, maybe 15 at the outside. And then we're ready to start enjoying, whether that's hiking, going for a swim, enjoying the fire, whatever.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You break down your book into different chapters based on how experienced the camper, the reader is, and why was it important for you to do that?
Well, so many of the camping guides in general, and tent camping in specific, books that I had seen and read, they organize things a little bit differently than how I did. I organized the book kind of like you're entering a camping career. You know, like you've got a career for work, you've got a career for camping, and everyone starts at step one to find out, do they actually like tent camping? And then from there, then it becomes, there are certain major decision points that you need to, you know, you'll eventually come upon as you continue in your camping career. And those are kind of by design. I mean, they're you naturally get to these decision points. And I thought, well, why not make a book that addresses that? You start at the beginning and you can go all the way as far as you want. You may not go all the way to somebody who has cold weather gear and is camping in the snow and the cold, but at least you know about it and you might want to try it at some point. But otherwise, if you only plan to go tent camping a few times a year, maybe in your backyard, maybe on some private property or some other campground, then you don't need the kind of monetary investment in gear that other people who go regularly, like weekly and year round, would need.
Yeah, you've got sort of the novice, and then the intermediate, and then the, you know, the not professionals. I've forgotten what you call that third level. I don't know, advanced, I think it is, and the. Maybe a word, and some callers online, but let's at least take the novice part and the gear you recommend. I, you know, when I started, the first time I went, I borrowed Well, the first time I went on my own, I borrowed somebody else's gear, to be honest. And that was a good thing.
I was just going to say, you know, borrowing camping gear when you haven't been before is really one of those things that I highly recommend, because you don't know if you're actually going to like it. So why would you invest a bunch of money into something that you may end up not liking and turning around having to sell that gear then? And it's a hassle that you can avoid by simply borrowing gear from other people who you know that do enjoy it. And you can probably be outfitted very quickly with the basics that you need.
Yeah. Thinking about items, what are some of the items? You know, obviously you got a tent, but there's a lot of smaller items that you have to think about too.
Well, right. Yeah. The tent is the obvious one. And then you need to think of how you're going to sleep. Sleeping bags are probably the most common option. But even within that, are you going to sleep just on the floor of the tent? Are you going to use an air mattress? A couple of years ago, my wife and I graduated, I like to say, to a cot, to sleep on a cot. And then thinking of the clothes that you want to bring, and this will somewhat be dictated by the weather conditions that you'll be in. Will it be hot? Will it be cool, windy? And then food. You need to think about how you want to eat. Most people do not enjoy going 48 hours without having something to eat. So planning your food accordingly, as well as how you're planning to cook that food. So those are some kind of very basic stuff to start with.
Yeah. Well, we've got some callers online, and maybe just get an experience or two. Cater in Herbster, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, this story falls in the category of I thought I was an experienced camper. And I have done a lot of camping, including backpacking for most of the year from Wisconsin to New York on the North Country Trail.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of wilderness camping. But this was a trip in Washington State in the mountains with my son and my grandson. My son was in his 30s, my grandson was about 6. And it was in a pretty steep area, and we camped in a flat along the stream. And, you know, among the things I always check for are widowmakers' limbs hanging up in trees and dead trees. And I thought I had checked everything out. We were sitting there, sitting around on logs, eating our supper. And all of a sudden we started hearing all these cracking noises. And we thought, oh, maybe that's an elk or a bear. And it was just a weird noise. And then all of a sudden we could hear this whooshing noise coming through the canopy, and I knew it was a huge tree, but we couldn't see it. All we could just hear it coming. And then all of a sudden we heard this whomp, like a huge whomp on the ground, and all the trees stopped moving. And I looked over at my grandson, and he was swatting mosquitoes, saying, "These darn mosquitoes." And so we walk over to our tent, and it was a 200-foot tall, we paced it off, 200-foot tall dead cedar snag that was up on the hillside. So it really accelerated by the time the tip hit the ground. The tip was probably 10 inches in diameter and was buried a foot in the ground. And it was lit 10 feet from our tent.
Well, there's a lesson learned, Darren.
For sure. That can be, especially at night, that can be a very scary situation, not being able to see what's happening. You hear it, but you've got no idea. Is it 10 feet away? Is it 500 feet away? And where is it going? Things like that. You can take as much time to kind of look around your surroundings, but sometimes things do take you by surprise.
Yeah. Kathy in Sun Prairie, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. My comment is for novice campers who are camping in the rain, and they think they have to put that tarp under the tent and extend it outside away from the tent, and then wonder why their floor is wet. You know, and you try to tell them, no, it's got to be, you know, smaller than the just smaller than the base of the tent. And also buying a tent too small, and then you roll over and you touch the sides of the tent and you get wet.
Yeah, well, those are good points, and you do have quite a nice little section. Thanks, by the way, Kathy. Appreciate it. I was remembering when the tent I borrowed was supposed to sleep four, and there were four of us, and it really did not sleep four. And you talk about they are very generous when they're trying to sell you the tent makers. If it says it sleeps four, it doesn't.
No, the tent manufacturers, I'm convinced, use models of elves or gnomes or something to come up with the number of people that a tent will sleep. Whatever the general rule of thumb that I follow is, whatever number they say on the side of the tent, you subtract at least two from that. So a four-person tent really is only designed for two people. And by the way, that also then includes some of the other things that you would have with you, some of your clothes. You know, you might have a book for reading at night, flashlight, just the general stuff that two people need is ideal for a four-person tent. If you have five or six people, you really ought to be looking for an 8 to 10-person tent for that space. And by the way, I should mention, think of your pet as another person.
Yes.
Unless you have their own small enclosure that they sleep in, most pets, dogs and cats that come with, stay in the same tent. So you need to treat them like another person. So if it's two people and a dog, you need to find a 6-person tent minimum to have enough space inside.
My favorite tent, the tent I loved, was 9x18, and it was supposedly sleep 11. But I tell you what, four people in that tent was great. You had all kinds of room to put all your stuff, and I love that tent, and even took it in the wintertime a couple of times. So, Kathy, thanks a lot for those two comments. I appreciate it. John and Boaz, you're up. What's up?
Good morning. Bears like food. Make sure you tie up your food on a tree, but don't bring it in the camp in the tent.
Yeah. That is a very good piece of advice, John. And Darren, I don't know if you've ever had any experiences like what John is sort of alluding to here.
Fortunately, I have not had such close encounters with the bear kind that way. But I have read stories, and before I even made the mistake, the stories kind of scared me straight, so to speak. And we take care every night. When we're putting our gear away before we go to sleep, to deal with any sort of food or leftovers or any containers that might have contained food, any of that stuff. You'll need to handle those. Make sure that they're, you know, usually where I go, primarily in the state of Wisconsin, is we'll keep all food items and so forth in our vehicle.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you don't have that luxury, then you're looking at basically setting up a bear-proof storage place away from your tent, a good distance, that's hung in the trees far up enough that bears can't get it. And they can reach pretty far.
Yes, they can. Oh, my goodness. Darren Kirby, our guest today, his book is titled The Best Tent Camping Guide from Novice to Expert. Great to have him with us. You can join in with your questions or experiences or advice to share at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, email address ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau and Clara Nyport are producers today. Tyler Ditter is our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. taking a look at how you can have your best tent camping experience on the show right now with Darren Kirby. He is the author of The Best Tent Camping Guide from Novice to Expert. That's his book. Questions or comments, experiences to share, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. I'll tell my one bear story. Darren, we arrived late after dark. It was kind of sprinkling, and we put up our tent, and I somehow managed to forget and leave my cooler outside of the car. Woke up in the middle of the night, and there was a very large black bear seated and had the cooler. It had its arms over the top of the cooler and was chomping down on an edge, biting through. But unfortunately for the bear was chewing on the side that had hinges, and he couldn't get it open. And so finally just batted it, and that was a heavy cooler, and it went rolling pretty quickly across the ground. And then it came over and walked over to our tent, and my buddy was standing in the door looking at it. And, of course, we had the fly closed, the mosquito netting fly. And the bear stood up when it got to the tent and looked Jerry right in the eye. He was at all. And I had my knife out, and I was prepared to put a new door in the back of the tent if the bear wanted to come through the front. But the bear dropped down and went to a camper camp area very close, and it happened to be a couple that were on their honeymoon, and they were camping, and they were in a pup tent, and they'd left all their food on their picnic table, and they woke up and the bear was standing on the picnic table and ate all their food, and they were up the next morning. And they were leaving.
Oh, sure.
Oh my goodness. Is there a particular type of tent, by the way, that you like? Other than size, yeah. You know, we've been talking size here, but.
Sure. Talking size is good, and that's going to vary, you know, person to person and what they're going with and who they're going with. But in general, I, over the years, have learned somewhat the hard way. And like one of the previous callers had mentioned with the having the tarp underneath your tent and extending it beyond the tent, getting the wet floor and so forth, yeah. Learn from all of that. One of the most important changes I've made in the tents that I've acquired since then has been tents that have rain flies that go all the way down to the ground. They completely covered the tent. Mm-hmm. And I can relate a small story. For we have a small Coleman Hooligan tent, sleeps four, which really means it sleeps two. Mm-hmm. Perfect for my wife and I. We did a driving tour of the UP of Michigan several years ago and primarily stayed in state parks as we went. And one of the nights that we stayed a couple of days into the trip, there was a downpour that hit us. Lots of lightning, plenty of breeze. You know, we were around pine trees, and the tent was still getting hammered with rain. Inside, we stayed absolutely dry.
Yeah,
we had no problems. We woke up the next morning, kind of shook off the rain fly, temporarily packed it up until our next setup, and went on our way. But that to me was proof positive that having that full size rain fly makes a tremendous difference.
Yeah. Well, speaking of tents, Carolyn in Winona, Minnesota has a question for you about tents. Let's go there. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I'm wondering what's the easiest to assemble tent, and how do you put together your cots if you're camping, say, in the Boundary Waters?
Okay, so Carolyn wants to be in the Boundary Waters. What's the easiest tent to set up? And what about you want a cot? You know, you got space issues always.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about going to the Boundary Waters, space and weight are major concerns. My nephew actually has gone for weeks at a time, kind of canoe camping with friends of his up in the Boundary Waters, and loves it. But they always measure exactly what they're bringing, just enough to kind of get the job done. Because remember, when you bring it in the Boundary Waters, you also have to pack all of that out. So it is truly leave no trace. For tents that are easy to assemble, the smaller is better, generally speaking, because there's less poles, there's less parts you need to put together. So the smaller the tent you can go with, the easier and faster it will be to set up. They do make some tents that are, I guess, quote unquote, like easy up tents that have the poles that are integrated within the tent itself, and they go up fairly quickly. So that is another option to look at. Regarding using a cot, they do make several different models that are fairly lightweight, but it's still, you can only fold it down so small for a cot, because it has to support the full length of whoever is on it. So it needs rigidity. It's got all these other attributes to it. And I may instead opt for doing either like closed cell foam pad or even a small inflatable, very thin inflatable to use instead of a cot. It's not going to be nearly as comfortable, but in terms of the weight savings and the size space savings, it kind of can't be beat.
Yeah, you probably will be happier during the day. May not be as happy as you might like in the evening when you're sleeping on it, but just the amount of space that they can take up is difficult. I like the closed cell mat that you were talking about, Darren, because they don't take up much space, and they do provide some comfort for, you know, they sort of help you with it, those little bumps that if you were just sleeping on the ground without the mat, you'd feel them, every one of them, and you don't feel every one when you have something like that.
So, correct, yeah. They kind of cover over some of those roots and small rocks.
So there you go, Carolyn. Thanks for calling. Jeff in Superior will give you a chance. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. A few years ago, I went to Northwest Outlet in Superior and bought a tent, a nylon tent, with some of those poles that you could bend, you know. Yeah. So I was excited for my hiking trip. I planned to hike across Isle Royale, where the ship drops you off at one end of the island. You hike to the other end of the island. It's about 50 miles. I did about 7 miles a day. And every day I put my food and everything up in a tree. I took all the precautions, and it was a summer day. Well, the last day of my trip, I thought, you know, I haven't had any problems all week. I'm just going to put my stuff in the tent overnight. And I'm only, you know, 5 miles from the ship dock where I'm going to meet the ship the next day. Well, it was a beautiful summer morning. The sun was rising. And I'm in my tent waking up thinking that I'm dreaming of my dog, my back home. But then I realized, oh, I'm on Isle Royale. And I woke up and I looked at, and a silhouette of a wolf went right between the sun and my tent, you know, and it walked, and I was, and my heart leaped into my throat. And he walked away, but I thought, oh, I shouldn't have put my food in my tent that night. But I got up and I walked to the boat dock as soon as I could.
Great story, Jeff. Thanks a lot. Have you had other experiences? You know, here we're talking about bears and wolves. More likely, people are going to have contact with raccoons and perhaps squirrels than they are. I don't want to, and I'm sure you don't want to scare people out of tenting.
No. You know, a lot of these stories could definitely make people think twice about going tent camping, because, well, there's just this tiny little piece of fabric between me and the rest of the outdoors. And frankly, the adage that, you know, they're more scared of you than you are of them pretty much holds true in most cases. But it certainly is wise to take precautions. And, you know, Jeff's example, that one time that you kind of let your guard down a little bit, often, unfortunately, comes back to bite you a little bit. In his case, it was more of a warning, like, hey, there are animals that have way keener sense of smell than we do. And you'll never know. That this is kind of the funny thing. Unless you set up trail cams or something, you really will never know what you are missing out on. And I say that in a good sense, by having your food away from your tent and, you know, up in a tree. But raccoons in specific, they really have, you know, they're fun, interesting creatures that can drive you mad. I had a great story once, and this is a good learning experience. My wife and I were camping for several days at Brunet Island State Park, just outside of Cornell, Wisconsin. And we drove our pickup at the time. And at night, you know, we try to put the put all of our food stuff in the vehicle, as I mentioned before. But we decided, well, they can't really get into the back of a pickup truck. I mean, that would involve a lot of climbing, and, you know, the sheet metal does not, you know, it doesn't conducive to putting claws in, things like that. So we put our cooler in the bed of the pickup truck, and I did not have a topper on it, so this was open to the elements. And at night, I woke up and I could hear some scrambling around, and I've got a bed liner in the back of my truck, and I could hear their little claws on the bed liner as they were scurrying around. I finally put an end to that, where I got up and shooed them all away and moved the cooler inside of the cab.
Yeah.
Fast forward to the next night, these same critters were coming back thinking, oh, they've got, you know, free access to a meal. And I had smartened up by then. I had a full day to think about what I did wrong. Immediately put the cooler in the cab of the truck, went to bed, could hear them again in the bed of the truck scampering around on that bed liner. The following morning, I woke up, and those raccoons were so disgusted that I moved their dinner. They actually left a small pile of poo in the back of my truck.
Oh,
so don't tell me that animals can't provide you a sense of humor.
Oh, man. Dick in Oak Creek, let's go to you. Hi, Dick.
Hello there. Okay, I've got a funny story for you. We were down in near Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, and we were in our tent, and I woke up early in the morning and I heard all these birds. I was kind of, what's going on here? And it seemed to get more and more and more of them. And it turned out that we had left some bread out on the picnic table overnight. I think every bird in Kentucky was there for a free breakfast.
Oh, yeah. This keeping food safe is... What kind of cooler do you recommend? You know, you want to get a good cooler. I think if you've been in the game a bit, what do you recommend?
Yeah, we've gone through a number of different coolers in terms of sizes and manufacturers. The one lately that I ended up getting an end of season deal on that we had picked up was a Coleman Extreme cooler, and that is supposed to keep things insulated well enough that when you put ice in it, about 3 or 4 days later, when you open it up, it should still have ice in there. And it's been a really good cooler for us. Now, there are others that are very, very expensive. Yeti comes to mind as, you know, a well-known brand that's also very expensive. A similar kind that you could look at would be Arctic, which is kind of a, for lack of a better phrase, we'll call it the poor man's Yeti, but it still works very well. And those have, you know, much thicker insulation, thicker walls. They can hold stuff cold for quite a number of days, maybe even over a week. And you're gonna spend good money on it. But as long as you take care of it and try not to leave it out for bears and raccoons and others, it should last you many, many years of really good service.
Yeah. Good advice. Ben in Alma, we'll go to you. Hi, Ben.
I do a lot of vacationing on motorcycle, and I like to camp. And of course, there's just a limited space on a motorcycle. I'm someone who has to have a pillow, otherwise I can't sleep. What I do, I just bring a pillowcase, and I use my clothes and my luggage, put them in the pillowcase, and use that as a pillow, so I don't have to pack a pillow. And I also go to like a Dollar General store and buy those inflatable, I don't know what you would call them, those things you float around on the pool.
Oh, yeah.
Full length. It's almost like a pillow that blows up into a pillow also on them. You get them for $2 or $3. They do puncture kind of easy, but they're awfully cheap. And then you deflate and they fold up about the size of a sweatshirt.
Good tips there, Darren.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard of people doing just what he does with their pillowcase and extra clothes, and especially when you're traveling lighter like that on a motorcycle, space is definitely at a premium, and anything that you can have that serves double, even triple duty, is very welcome for space saving purposes.
Yeah, absolutely, Ben. Thank you so much. Appreciate the call. I've always had containers for, you know, certain things that I take on every trip, and they go into the box, into the various few of the boxes that I have. When I get home, I go back through them and make sure they're clean and, you know, and so forth. And then I put them back in that box so they're ready the next time I would want to use it or use them. And so that's kind of how I do it, but I'm never too concerned about space saving because typically I might have my little 14-foot Alumacraft and I throw everything or a lot of things in there, so I don't really need to worry too much about space.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, there's plenty of ways to create more space while you tent camp, and towing a boat like that is a great option. If there's several people going and you need space in the vehicle for people, usually a small enclosed trailer will fit the bill as well. I know my brother has one that when they go full out camping, they'll pack everything into a fully enclosed trailer, and that includes bringing bikes with. They've got a kayak,
yeah,
and other stuff for all sorts of fun. And but they still tent camp as well. They've got a nice big dome tent that they've had for years that works out great for their family. So
yeah, it's really nice when you can do that. And most of my a lot of my tent camping had to do with fishing, musky fishing, and so you know, with the boat, the rods, the reels, the bikes, everything could go in that boat, and that was always pretty handy. Oh man, well. Tom and Cable has something for us. Hi, Tom.
Yes. Hi, Larry. I used to live out in the state of Oregon for a while. I used to do a lot of hiking, camping in the Cascades out there. And one of the things we used to do, and you made me think of it when we were talking about the person that was maybe going up the Boundary Waters or trying to find a way to camp comfortably but not take a lot of stuff. So we used very small tents. And then when we would get to wherever we were going to camp for the night, we would, where you would lay down your tent, it's like gather any of the fallen soft debris that's around, like pine or any kind of stuff like that, and then put your tent on that, and then it was automatically a little bit more comfortable. But that was just all I was going to share. And good luck to everybody doing it. It's a blast.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate the call. Well, you know, when you become a tent camper, you become over time, you develop all these little tricks of the trade, don't you, Darren?
Oh, that's very true. And it's kind of fun when you meet people at other campgrounds and state parks to kind of talk with them. And it's usually a thing where you'll find people want to, you know, talk about the latest gear that they've got or the latest thing they learned. And so it's a great way to get more information and refine your technique even more every time you go out.
Yeah, absolutely. I always used air mattresses, and I had a little machine that I could hook into what used to be the cigarette lighter, and blow up those those units really pretty quickly, and I didn't so I wasn't running out of gas myself trying to blow them up, which I did the first time, and after that I went and bought those little units, which wasn't very expensive, and did the job very nicely. And now you can get them with batteries, and they work really well. They you know, takedown, I think, is important. You know, for people, you've had your tenting experience, and even if it didn't rain, I always think it's a good idea to, you know, really make, before you pack that tent away, that you do a little cleanup and air out and so forth.
Absolutely. We have a very small, whisk broom and a dustpan that once we empty out our tent, we'll actually sweep through the whole thing to get out all the dirt and other things that we just track in through the course of a week or weekend before we roll it up and pack it away. So there's little things that you can do that really kind of help enhance the experience as well as prolong the life of your gear.
We mentioned that you have a blog. How do people find your blog?
Sure. The blog is all about tent camping. It's called The Tenting Life, and you can find it at thetentinglife.com. And I have plenty of different entries talking a lot about different gear, experiences, camping solo, things like that.
And your book, The Best Tent Camping Guide from Novice to Expert, I imagine people can order that or pick it up at their local bookstore.
Correct. That book and all of the rest of mine are available through Amazon. And occasionally I go to different events around the state. You might see me there, and I'd be happy to autograph it for you as well.
Well, Darren, it's been a lot of fun. It's brought back some memories. I think we could have done the whole 90 minutes here talking, just if nothing else, about experiences. A lot of really good experiences, and then a few that make your hair stand out in, but then become probably the best stories you tell from there on out. A real pleasure, Darren. Thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, we talked about camping. Now we're going to switch gears and talk with you about bats. And, of course, there's a lot of concern about bats in this state and in this country, for that matter. And we'll learn what's the latest, what do we know about the bat population in our state, and what can we do to perhaps help make it better. That next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.